Sawate discipuli and sawate omnes. Welcome again to another episode of Latin in Layman's, where I'm going to be doing some Latin grammar, and we're going to start from ground one. We're going to start from the base. We're going to start at Grammatica 1, as I like to call it, because all of the materials that I make for my students, I call them grammaticas, aka grammar lessons, essentially. And what we're going to do is we're going to scaffold up. We're going to start slow because this is Latin in layman's, and then I'm going to do more nitty gritty. So I'll start off slow and then we'll do a recap over multiple episodes. But stick with me. We're going to understand in this case for today Latin noun properties, and especially we're going to kind of list and describe properties of Latin nouns as well as list noun functions that are associated with those Latin noun cases. So we're just doing simple stuff for today, but it is kind of nuanced, a little, you know, terminology based. So stick with me. And with that, would really appreciate you leaving me a tip over at Ko-Fi, because this guy doesn't monetarily get anything from this podcast unless you decide to actually tip or anything like that. I don't put a paywall on this thing, although I could, I don't really want to. I don't think it's necessary. I think that if your soul is moved to do so and you learn something and you want to help me out and support me and be giving towards my cause, I'd really, really appreciate it. Thank you. Okay, so any language that you're ever going to learn consists of different types of words that perform these different jobs. These categories of words that perform similar functions are known as parts of speech, right? The first and most fundamental of these categories that we will learn about in Latin is the noun, which is the part of speech that names a person, place, or thing or idea. I'm hoping that we all know that and we're all nodding our heads. Possible nouns in Latin might include a girl, which is a person, Rome, a place, story, a thing, excellence, an idea. And Latin nouns possess three main properties. Remember these. These are important. We have number, gender, and case. Number refers to singular and plural, gender, masculine, feminine, or neuter, case, nominative, genitive, dative, accusative, and ablative, of which we're going to dive into individually in a hot second here. So I just wanted to touch upon those. These properties give us a lot of information about Latin nouns, including how the nouns are formed and how they function within the sentence. The cases will basically dictate how that noun can function, whether it's the subject, the object, the indirect object, the possessive noun, if it's embedded within a prepositional phrase. So we're going to start distinguishing these properties from one another and identifying the information they provide. So let's start off with number. Latin noun properties, number. Like I said, singular and plural. Not too much rocket science here, but although it may sound strange, the concept of a noun's number should be familiar since English nouns possess that similar property and or same property. Number of nouns, like I said, simply tells us how many of that noun we are talking about, singular or plural. One or more than one. Wow. The ways in which we create the different plural forms of English nouns actually give us our first look at how we work with nouns in Latin. So you're going to learn that a Latin noun requires a variety of different endings to arrive at its various forms, which then tell us how that noun is going to function within the sentence. English often similarly uses different endings to create plural and singular forms. Take, for instance, the English plural endings S, ES, or IES that are used in certain circumstances to indicate a noun and make them plural. Adding these English endings helps us form the plural nouns of girl like girls, or ash like ashes, or story like stories, right? The S, the ES, or the IES. So in English, we do entertain endings sometimes in order to change the meaning of which that word is conveying, and or to give it a little bit more of, you know, properties, right? So there it is. Number, singular, plural. noun gender. The concept of a noun's gender is one that's likely, well, seems rather foreign to most English speakers because we don't have grammatical gender within English. Our gender is a little bit more nuanced and abstract, which is why we have come to a time in our lives where people are making it into this political and, you know, either one side or the other side kind of thing, where grammatical gender should be, well, I'm not going to get into it, but we're just misunderstanding the fact that, well, we've kind of entertained this stuff for a long time, you guys. In fact, just going to say it straight up, because I was talking to somebody, one of my followers, they were talking about and asking about like Roman antiquity, and they were, I was recommending documentaries and stuff like that to them. And yeah, you know, I mean, like the aspect of gender fluidity and or sexual fluidity was so rampant in Roman antiquity that and Greek antiquity. I mean, like, for those that don't know, Achilles, come on, Patroclus, that was literally his boy toy, you guys. I'm sorry if that is a crass way of putting it, but it kind of was. I mean, they were lovers, but, you know, like, Achilles was, there was a lot of that kind of stuff. In fact, they called it pueri back in the day. Pueri, referring to the of the boy, essentially, so showing possession of the boy. There was a lot of that, and it was rampant, and there was also a lot of other things, like gender, you know, changing, and being very, I don't know, the Egyptians did it, so I'm getting off on a tangent here, but, like, remember, I mean, Achilles goes pretty much ape, S-H-I-T, on Hector, once Hector kills Patroclus. I mean, the fact that he literally tied Hector to the back of his carriage and just drug him around on gravel for a week. Yikes. Anyways, we can find some examples, though, in these gendered terms in English, like Mr. or Mrs., actor or actress, waiter or waitress, god or goddess, but each pair of which applies either a masculine or feminine gender. In Latin, there are three genders. We have masculine, feminine, and neuter. However, these genders are given to both living and non-living nouns, so they do not necessarily correspond to an individual's gender as the terms Mr. or Mrs. do. Instead, genders in Latin are simply different cases of nouns that will interact differently with the words, adjectives, that modify them. Ad meaning to or towards, eject coming from archaeo, which means to throw. Adjectives are what are thrown towards whatever they are modifying, aka nouns. There are some patterns to the genders of Latin nouns. For instance, you will soon discover that most nouns of the first declension are feminine. There are some exceptions, though, and the gender of the Latin noun will often need to be memorized. Finally, last property here, we have case. We rely heavily on the order of words in English sentences to tell us what their functions and relationships to other words are. We will often refer to these functions and relationships as a word's syntax. Syn, with or together, tax, order, the with order, the together order, which can be partially determined in Latin by a noun's case. In English, we can usually identify a noun's syntax as a subject noun because it is typically the first noun in the sentence, aka word order, whereas in Latin, we can tell a noun is a subject noun regardless of its position in the sentence because it appears in the nominative case, coming from nomen meaning name, the naming case, one of the five noun cases you will learn in something that I'm going to recite in about a hot second here, along with their basic functions. So we have cases, which are the fancy dancy term, and then they really just refer to simple syntax deals. So We have nominative, generative, dative, accusative, and ablative, and we have vocative, but I don't really dive into vocative. If you're curious about that, you can go ahead, but vocative is usually the same thing as nominative. That's why I don't really spend much time with it. The only irregularity you're going to see is in the second declension, masculine. So don't worry about it. Nominative, generative, dative, accusative, and ablative. Nominative, coming from nomen, meaning name in Latin, refers to syntax, subject noun. Case, nominative, syntax, subject noun. Genitive. This is where we get gens, gentis, which refers to the type or class. It's where you get gender from. Gendered words were just classifications back in the day. Gender didn't start to actually have more of its masculine and feminine connotations until later on, because what we're going to realize is that some of these words in Latin that are, because they're all genderized, some of them make sense intuitively, like man would be masculine, woman would be feminine, but something like a table is feminine. I don't think a table, such as an inanimate object, would be feminine, but it's just a classification giving it a, that a ending, as in mensa in Latin. And then in Spanish, it's mesa, right? Mesa or mensa. But if table is feminine, I think that we can go ahead and not fully rely on the fact that if something seems masculine, it's going to be masculine, or feminine, it's going to be feminine. But a lot of the time, it will be the case. Latin has some irregularities. I can't explain why. I was not consulted in the design phase of this language, or else I would explain it to you. Otherwise, make yourself a time machine and go back in time. That being said, let's get back on into gens, gentis, coming from or embedded within the case genitive, referring to a possessive noun. Dative, from dodare, to give in Latin. Indirect object. To or for whom is the, well, indirect object kind of like benefiting from? Are they benefiting from, receiving from the action being done to the actual object? Accusative can either refer to the direct object or the object of the preposition. And then finally, the ablative, referring to the object of the preposition. And usually, as we will encounter in early Latin, ablative will always be associated with a preposition of some type. It will be associated with a static preposition. That's why accusative can also be an object of the preposition, but only with dynamic prepositions. If you're ever confused by that, a Latin dictionary will tell you whether it's dynamic or static, because it'll just be like, oh, if you look up trans in the dictionary, it's going to be trans, which means a cross plus accusative is what it'll say, aka associated with the accusative. If you looked up something like sub, which means under in Latin, you would see sub equals under plus ablative, aka because it is a static preposition associated with the ablative. So just because we can tell that the noun in the nominative case is the subject noun, or the one in the dative case is the indirect object, does not mean that there is no sense of word order in Latin. I don't really rely a lot on word order, as long as that student can reliably tell me exactly how each noun is functioning within the sentence. But in fact, we're going to learn the general ordering pattern of words in Latin sentences just a little bit later. So don't worry about that for now. But let's go ahead and recap here. Let's recap all of which we've just talked about. We call that a recapitulata in the Latin. Re meaning back, and caput, head. So when you recap, it's basically like you're having thrown back through the head. Essentially, you're going back through your head, recapping what we just read, reading comprehension. What are the three basic properties that we described earlier of a Latin noun? Three of them. Gender, masculine, feminine, and neuter. Number, singular or plural. Case, nominative, genitive, dative, accusative, or ablative. There you go with the three. What are the possibilities for the number in the Latin noun? Singular or plural? Genders, masculine, feminine, or neuter? And then cases, again, like I said. Remember what the first one is? refers to the subject noun? Nominative. How about, let's go from the back, possessive noun. What do we call the possessive noun? That's the simple term, the syntactical form. Genitive. Now we're going to do the fancy-dancy term, dative. What does dative refer to? Indirect object. Accusative. Can be either two. Can be the object of the preposition in cases of dynamic prepositions, or what do we also say? Think about it when you're pointing an accusation at someone. I accuse them, accusative. They are the direct object receiving that accusation that you're pointing at them for. And then finally, ablative, referring to that object of the preposition and or prepositional phrase. We're going to leave it there. That's our first dealio. I hope you learned something new. And if you did, please consider contributing to my Ko-Fi. Contribute to likes and shares and subscriptions. Go to my YouTube at Mr. Connerly, TikTok at Mr. Connerly. Leave me a voice message if you learned something and or if you have questions. Really appreciate it. Thanks again. Tempus est discedere.